Here's what works for me. Whenever possible from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., I disconnect from social media, close my email, and put my phone in airplane mode. It's amazing how much more work you get done when you're not constantly being distracted by text messages and social media updates. I also set fences around my weekly schedule by setting as many meetings as possible on the 1 or 2 days a week that I'm in the office. And I try to keep one entire day free of meetings and phone calls so I can really dig into the big projects that require my attention. If you can't implement something like this because you work in an environment where you're expected to respond to emails immediately, that's okay. You still have a couple of options. First, you can set your phone to Do Not Disturb, and then go into your settings and select whom you want to receive calls or texts from, such as your boss. This way, your phone will only ring if your boss is trying to reach you. If your boss normally contacts you via email, set an out-of-office message that says, "I'm heads down working on a deadline. If this is urgent, please text me." Alternatively, you can respond to an email from your boss by saying, "I'm making so much progress on this project and I can't wait to share it with you. Can I get back to you on this other topic later today?" This sends a clear yet nice message that you want to be left alone to focus. Perform in airplane view. Over the weekend, I look at my calendar for the upcoming week and evaluate whether or not the meetings and calls I have scheduled align with my priorities. If not, I do one of four things to get some of that essential time back. Delegate, cancel, reschedule, or shorten the meeting. Another tactic is to question recurring meetings. So many meetings are scheduled simply because that's how things have always been done. Take a look at the recurring meetings you attend every week and ask yourself if they're really necessary. If you're not the one scheduling the meetings, why not try raising this issue with the person who is? Say, "I'm concerned that I have all these recurring meetings on my calendar. A lot of them are in the morning, and I find that is when I do my best work. Is it possible to move some of these meetings to the afternoon?" A lot of the women I mentor would never think to raise issues like this, but in general, you should never be afraid to bring up an issue as long as it stems from an authentic desire to make sure you're doing your best work. Avoid the creep. One thing I hear over and over from the young women I mentor is that they've negotiated flexible hours at work or even taken a pay cut in exchange for part-time hours, such as 80% of their salary to work 4 days a week instead of five. Yet, their work hours magically creep up over time, and eventually they end up working full-time without being compensated for it. Then they don't know how to raise this issue without coming across as selfish or lazy. No doubt this is a tricky situation. I always advise these women to nip it in the bud as early as possible and set expectations so their bosses don't get accustomed to them being available 24/7 and then resent it when they cut back. This is one reason that boundaries are even more important than usual when you have a flexible or freelance work arrangement. If you negotiate a flexible schedule, set clear boundaries right away using all of the advice in this chapter, and then make an effort to maintain them as closely as possible. If you see your work hours starting to creep up, address it with your boss quickly. "I'd like to talk about going back to our original agreement of working 4 days a week." I understand that it can be hard to bring this up without fearing that it will be held against you. But remember, your boss already agreed to this and hired you with this boundary in mind. You're actually doing her a favor by reminding her to stick to her own boundaries. Get rid of the time sucks. While you're creating your to-don't list, make sure to add all the little time sucks that add up and keep your schedule out of alignment with your priorities. If you're not sure what these are, try keeping track of how you're spending your time for a few days. Then look at your time log and ask yourself, what can I delegate, delete, or even barter? So many of the young women I mentor barter tasks with their friends and acquaintances. For example, a young woman who was right out of law school asked her friend, who was a web designer, to create a website for her burgeoning law practice. In exchange, she reviewed her friend's contracts with new clients. I think this is a great way to inexpensively delegate tasks in exchange for something you enjoy or that comes more naturally to you. In her book, Thrive, Arianna Huffington talks about learning to cross something off her to-do list simply by deciding not to do it. I love this idea. We all have so many things that we feel we should do, but do we really have to do them? If you've been meaning to do something and you haven't gotten around to it, Maybe that's because it's actually out of alignment with your priorities. If that's the case, then cross it off your list and consider it done. You've just freed up more time for the things that really matter. For example, when I was at Time Inc., I had it on my to-do list to reformat a weekly report that went out to my team, but I never managed to find time to do it. Other tasks kept taking precedence. Finally, I realized that this was because the formatting of the report wasn't really that important. It was an internal document, and it was the content that truly mattered. So I crossed this task off of my list and never looked back. How to deliver a kind no. By now, you have some ideas about where to draw your boundaries and how to set them up. Now it's time to maintain them. When a request for your time comes in that falls outside of your boundaries, in other words, it's been filtered out by the criteria you set, this means just saying no. This is where a lot of nice girls struggle. They wonder how they can say no without damaging the relationship with this person. There have been times, I admit, even recently, when I tried to avoid saying no and ended up making things so much worse. A company founder recently reached out to me through a mutual friend. I took an initial call, and he followed up by asking for an introduction to someone in my network. I made the introduction, and then he followed up by asking for another one. At this point, I had been helpful to him in a way that felt good to me, but I wasn't willing to devote any more time to his company. But instead of simply telling him this, I'm embarrassed to say that I ignored his email, hoping he'd get the hint because I didn't want to say no. He emailed me a few days later, saying that he appreciated how helpful I'd been thus far, and hoped I was comfortable continuing to make introductions. He also asked if I'd be interested in coming on board as a formal advisor. This forced me to be clear with him. I wrote, "Thank you for the opportunity to be involved in such a great company. I've had to cut back on my advising to focus on my book, so I can't take this on right now, but I wish you the best of luck." Notice that I said, "Thank you," instead of, "I'm sorry." He responded graciously, and I was grateful. This interaction reinforced the fact that a kind no is always possible, and always better than no answer at all. There are many ways of delivering a kind no. You've already read many examples throughout this chapter, and I'm constantly learning new ways to nicely yet clearly assert my boundaries. Pat Headley, a fellow advisor and investor, recently told me, "Whenever I'm asked to do something that I know I cannot accomplish with the utmost quality, I say, I can't do this because I won't be able to allocate the time and effort needed to be successful and to do the very best job possible. I would never want to disappoint or fall short of expectations." Better to say no than to do a bad job. When positioned in this way, people understand and appreciate why I have to say no. I couldn't have said it better. Here are some additional ways of phrasing a kind no so you can make sure that your boundaries and relationships at work remain intact. I would love to help, but right now I'm focusing on... Thank you so much for thinking of me. I'd love to work with you, but my plate is completely full for the next quarter. Please think of me again the next time you have an opportunity. I wish I could help, but I'm not sure I'm the right person for this. You need someone who focuses on... I feel really comfortable doing the X part. I think it would be so much more efficient for someone who's an expert in Y to handle that. I'd love to see you, but I'm heads down building my business. Can we reconnect over the summer? Own your no. You've probably noticed the huge trend in the media these days, telling women to step up, go for it, lean in, and say yes. And while that's certainly an improvement over the messages that were sent to previous generations of women, it's not always realistic. In fact, this type of extra intense encouragement sometimes makes women feel that we must say yes to every opportunity, or else we'll be missing out, or worse, become bad feminists. FOMO, anyone? But the truth is that sometimes the best decision is no, even if it means turning down a big opportunity. As I was writing this book, three companies were pursuing me about taking on a big operating role. I'll be honest, my ego loved to think about how it would look to others if I accepted one of these jobs. But then I took my own advice and took a moment to visualize what every day would look like if I did. I'd be commuting over an hour each way into New York City every day. On days when I didn't have a work event at night, I'd see my kids for 30 minutes. On days when I did have an event, I wouldn't see them at all. That is not what I want, at least not right now. Though it was difficult to make, I have learned to own this decision. Knowing that circumstances may change and something different may be right for me at some point in the future. I do not feel like I'm choosing between my family and my career. Nor am I advocating that any woman should feel like she has to choose. It's not either or. But I also have no interest in echoing the same old mantra that women can have it all. Instead of trying to have it all, whatever that even means, we need to reshape what it means for us to be invested in our careers. Right now, for me, it doesn't have to mean working at a big company. I also know how fortunate I am to be able to make that decision. It took me over 2 decades of putting in long hours to reach the point where I can shape my career to suit my needs. In Lean In, Sheryl Sandberg encourages women to have a big career, and I don't disagree. But first, we have to redefine what having a big career means. Sometimes when you're defining that for yourself, saying no is the right decision. The sweet spot in between yes and no. Requests for your time, energy, or expertise often seem like yes or no propositions. But I found that there's actually plenty of space to be helpful in between yes and no. It's all about saying, I can't do that now, but here's what I can do. Often, this is the sweet spot for adding value without doing heavy lifting. Over time, I've gotten more and more comfortable taking this approach, and have found that it's the perfect combination of being giving while protecting my own time and boundaries. I use this technique most often at work, but it has come in handy in many different situations, most recently with the PTA at my son's school. This year, they asked me to co-chair the big annual fundraising gala. But I knew that running the auction, as I had the year before, would be a much better fit for me. So I told them, I think the best role for me to play is to run the auction again. It's a ton of work, but I have all the processes down, and it's easy to get stuff donated given the work I do and the relationships I have. I'm confident that we can put together a great auction committee based on the ladies who did it last year, and I have a few new moms that I've already recruited to help. I think it would be great to have one or two co-chairs that are running the entire event, and I will be their point person on the auction. It made me smile when the PTA vice president responded by saying, I totally understand. In fact, I could learn a thing or two from you about acknowledging when it's time to know you're stretched and not overcommit. So thrilled to have you on to chair the auction. To give you a better idea of how to do this, here are some of my go-to responses when my answer isn't quite a yes or a no. They can be adapted to any situation. The point is that I try to be respectful and offer an alternative way to help that is less time intensive than the initial ask. As a mentor to a young woman asking to go out for coffee and pick my brain, I would love to have you join me for an upcoming mentor circle. We get 10 to 15 women together and magic usually happens. Or try saying, I'd love to. I'm heads down working on an important project at work. Can we reconnect in a few months? Then leave it to them to reach back out to you. As a networker, to someone asking me to introduce them to a person in my network, I'd love to introduce you. Can you write an email about yourself and why you're interested in speaking that I can forward to her? As a job candidate, to a hiring manager or recruiter who is offering you a job that you don't want to take, this job isn't the right fit for me right now, but I have 2 people in mind who would be great candidates. I'd be happy to connect you with them. As an advisor to a founder who wants to meet with me, I've pressed pause on formal advising for the next 6 months while I'm working on a book, but I'm happy to spend 20 minutes on the phone if you're looking for specific advice. This offer to spend a limited amount of time on the phone is a great way to be giving to anyone who's looking to get on your calendar without spending a lot of time meeting with someone in person, plus the time it would take for you to get there and back. As a friend to a friend who's hosting an event that she wants me to attend, unfortunately, I can't make it, but I'd love to help you promote the event on social media. Key takeaways. Before drawing boundaries, it's important to first identify your priorities so you can make sure to devote your time to activities that are in alignment with them. To do this, I created a 4-square model, and every few months I revisit my priorities and make sure my time is being allocated appropriately. When obligations come up that fall outside of your priorities, try to respond with a clear but kind no. Or if possible, delegate the task so you have time to focus on other priorities. There is a sweet spot in between yes and no. When something is asked of you, think about whether or not there is a better, more efficient way for you to add value. Chapter 9. Multiply your superpower. As you can probably tell from many of the stories in this book, mentorship is a big part of my life. In part, it is so important to me because early on in my career, I didn't have any professional mentors. My parents were incredibly loving and supportive in every way, but they were immigrants with no contacts in or knowledge about the business world. They couldn't advise me or put me in touch with professional mentors. Then in college, I met peers whose parents were investment bankers or worked for big companies. They seemed to have a much easier time getting internships and even jobs as soon as they graduated. It was as though they had a built-in mechanism to jumpstart their careers. Meanwhile, I found that I had to learn how to succeed on my own. Looking back, I understand how much easier it would have been if I'd had someone in my corner who was already connected to the business world. The first person who took an interest in my career path and took on a mentor role in my life was my boss, Lou, at Ernst & Young. He's the one who first told me that I needed to voice my opinions in meetings instead of just saying, "That's interesting." In that company, my colleagues and I moved from team to team, serving different clients based on their needs. I was assigned to work for a client on Lou's team, and it went so well that he booked me to work with him again for another client. Lou was highly regarded in the company, so he received a lot of the plum assignments. Because he had so much faith in me, I was assigned to some of the company's best clients. Thanks to Lou, I saw firsthand how impactful it was to have someone like him looking out for me. Finally, finding a mentor was like having a teacher who really got me. He saw my strengths and helped me play to them, while also filling in the gaps in my knowledge and experience. Overall, this mentoring relationship gave me a tremendous amount of confidence and know-how early on in my career. That's the essence of what a mentor can do for you. He or she is that individual whose guidance and counsel you not only learn from, but also fully trust. Whenever you have tricky or difficult decisions to make, it's a wonderful feeling to know that you can reach out to your mentor as a safety net and source of support. In short, finding and developing a relationship with a mentor, or numerous mentors, is critical to your rise in the business world. Yet many of the young women I speak to tell me that finding a mentor can be extremely difficult, especially if they are hesitant or insecure about asking for help or requesting someone's time. I'm often surprised by how many women I speak to who don't have and have never had a mentor. Sure enough, LinkedIn conducted a survey in 2011 that found only 1 in 5 women had ever had a professional mentor. This is a big problem when you consider the research showing that, all else being equal, having a mentor can be the X factor that helps launch your career forward. Here's what some of the women I surveyed said about the challenge to find a mentor at work. "I've always wanted to find a mentor, but I work in a niche industry with very few women, and I've never figured out how to find the right person. Sometimes I meet women in my industry who offer to meet with me, but I can't tell if they really mean it or if they're just being nice, so sometimes I don't follow up. Then I end up wondering if I've missed out on a big opportunity. I have a mentor at my company, but sometimes it seems like when she gives me advice, she's thinking more about what's good for the company than what's good for me. Do I need to find someone outside the company who can be more objective?" Identifying the right mentor. The process of connecting to a mentor is very similar to the process of networking that you read about in Chapter 7. But before you start networking to find a mentor, it's important to identify the right mentor, one or more who can expertly help guide you toward success. Many of the young women I speak to assume that their bosses will mentor them, but that's not always the case. Furthermore, your boss is not necessarily the best mentor for you, though he or she very well may be. Think about the people in your life who have successfully blended kindness with strength. Who do you admire and want to be like? When you think back to your most impactful teachers and coaches, they're rarely the ones who let you get away with murder, or the ones who were nasty and discouraging. They're the ones who were kind yet firm and helped you thrive. This is the best type of mentor, That's right, not all mentors are created equal. To get the most out of this relationship, it's important to be intentional about whom you will approach to become your mentor. To make this process simple, I've broken it down into three steps. Step one, find your type. Start by asking yourself what type of mentor you're looking for. From my experience, a mentee is usually looking for at least one of these three characteristics in a mentor. One, power to help you advance in your career. If this is what you need, start by looking at the people in senior positions in your company. When I was at Time Inc., young women often reached out to me because they knew I was in a powerful position to help them move up within the company. Two, an influential network. If your goal is to network your way to new opportunities, perhaps you need a mentor who's extremely well-connected and also willing to act as a gateway to other people. Three, expertise. This can be a specific skill set, such as leadership or managerial skills if you're transitioning into a manager role, knowledge about the inner workings of a particular company or industry, or experience dealing with a certain type of situation. For example, many young women reach out to me to find out how I made the transition from media to investing. My experience making this transition has given me expertise that they can learn from if they are contemplating something similar. Reading this, you may realize that you need a mentor with one, two, or even all three of these attributes. You may need three separate mentors to get all three, or you might luck out and find one mentor with all of them. In general, it's wonderful to have more than one mentor to give you multiple perspectives, but these relationships do take time and energy. Be intentional and try to find a small handful of mentors who can make the biggest possible impact. Step two, go in or out. Once you've identified the type of mentor you're looking for, think about whether that person should be within your current company or on the outside. If you love working at the company, and your goal is to keep advancing internally, then it's best to look for someone powerful within the company. If, however, you're looking to transition to another company or even a different industry, your ideal mentor will be someone on the outside. If you're unsure of what your exact goals are, but you do know that you're eager to move on from your current situation, it may be helpful to network and find mentors who exist completely outside of your universe. A fresh perspective can get you thinking about the infinite number of possibilities that are out there. For example, connecting with Soraya Darabi, who you read about in Chapter 7, gave me insight about and access to the tech world, which was critical to me eventually making that transition. We often get stuck thinking that our mentor has to be someone in our particular silo, but that can be unnecessarily limiting. The ideal mentor may be right in front of you without you realizing it. Think about all of the people you are already connected to. If you're just starting out in your career, it can be an old professor, an acquaintance, or even someone you used to babysit for. Do any of those people have power, access, or expertise that can help you? If not, perhaps they are connected to someone else who does. This all ties back to networking. You never know how someone may be helpful down the road. So it's always a good idea to broaden your horizons and your network as much as possible. Step three, assess their interest in mentoring. Not everyone is a good mentor, and for that matter, not everyone wants to be a good mentor. A good mentor is someone who enjoys it and feels that it's a natural part of his or her job. Once you've identified the type of mentor you're looking for and whether he or she is inside or outside of your company, it's important to assess a potential mentor's penchant for mentorship. If you think that your boss would be an ideal mentor, pay attention to whether or not he or she asks a lot of insightful questions and provides support. If so, your search may be over. But if he or she focuses more on getting the work done and doesn't volunteer advice or guidance, it may be best to look elsewhere. In this case, start paying attention to how your peers and friends speak about their own bosses and mentors. Perhaps you have a friend who raves about how helpful her boss is. Or maybe a peer works for someone you think would make a good mentor. But your friend's feedback is that while she's very powerful and connected, mentoring really isn't her thing. Another good way to go about this is to ask your boss about someone he or she knows. I'm looking to learn more about insert topic. And I thought, name, could provide some great insights and guidance. What do you think? If your boss doesn't think that the person you mentioned would make a good mentor, it's very likely that he or she can suggest someone else who would. Connect to a mentor. Now that you know the exact type of mentor you're looking for and where you may find him or her, how will you make the connection and stand out among all the other people who may be vying for this person's attention? Here are some of the techniques I found to be most effective. Get a warm introduction. I discussed this briefly in Chapter 7, but it bears repeating. Being personally introduced to a potential mentor by a mutual friend or acquaintance will carry a lot of weight and make you stand out far more than sending a cold email. Casually drop this into conversations with colleagues and friends. One thing I'm focusing on right now is finding a mentor who can help me with ... Or, I think name would be an ideal mentor as I transition into a managerial role. Do you think she'd be willing to meet with me? Hopefully, one of the people you mention this to will be willing to make a warm introduction to the right person. Another effective way to find mutual contacts is to go onto LinkedIn and other social media sites and see whom your connections are connected to. Then reach out and offer to write an email that he or she can forward to your potential mentor. This makes it easier for them, and therefore more likely that he or she will actually do it. In this introductory email, make sure it's clear that the meeting will be mutually beneficial rather than parasitic. Instead of the basic, "I'd love to meet so I can pick your brain and learn more about your experience," here's what one woman wrote to me recently. "I've been following your career and I'm a big fan. I'm currently in transition and I'm so impressed with your move from media to investing. I would love to learn more about your experience. And in return, I have some ideas on how Company X in your portfolio can grow its audience based on my experience in digital marketing." See how much more powerful and compelling that is? She had done her research about my career trajectory and offered to share her expertise in a specific and helpful way in exchange for my time. Find a personal point of connection. If you can't find someone to make a warm introduction for you, don't worry. There are other ways to successfully connect with a potential mentor. I recently received a cold email that started with, "I see that we both used to live in Mount Kisco. It's so beautiful up there. The idea that we had something in common made me want to keep reading. This requires doing a little research beforehand, but it's bound to pay off." Create a moment. A very savvy young woman recently put together a panel discussion about women in technology at her company and then reached out to me asking if I'd like to attend. I did, and when I arrived, she introduced herself and made a point of chatting with me as I got settled and found my seat. I was motivated to connect with her because we'd already emailed back and forth about the event. Sure enough, she emailed me a few days later, thanking me for attending the event and asking to meet with me. It seemed that she had created the entire event to give herself an opportunity to network with influential panelists and audience members. Plus, of course, the panel was a win for her company. I was so impressed with the strategy that I agreed to meet her for coffee. If that seems like too large scale and complex of a process just to get a coffee date, think about other existing moments or events that you can use to connect with a potential mentor. I recently got an email from yet another young woman asking to meet with me who used a unique and really effective tactic. Instead of requesting a meeting, she asked, "Will you be at any conferences, networking events, or speaking engagements coming up where we can meet?" This made it so easy for me to meet with her because I didn't have to find time on my calendar. I simply told her about a few events I was already planning on attending, and she showed up. This made a great impression on me, which means I'll probably be more likely to say yes to a meeting the next time she asks. Get noticed. When I think about the early days of my career, which took place before social media and online networking existed, I see that I was able to find many valuable mentors because I simply did good work that stood out to them. They wanted to mentor me because they saw my potential. Of course, the other tips in this section are important, and you need to pick your head up from your desk to network and put yourself out there. But nothing can fully replace the value of over-delivering in a way that will really make you stand out. Review Chapter 2 for advice on how to step up and create opportunities that will help get you noticed. Form a personal board of directors. Adora Udoji, who, as you read earlier, bravely spoke up to an interviewer who said she didn't look like a tax lawyer, refers to her group of mentors and mentees as her personal board of directors. She told me the biggest mistake a young woman can make is thinking that she can figure everything out by herself. You need a diverse group of people you've developed relationships with to round out your experience and expertise. Adora suggests looking at the people who are already in your life, who you respect, instead of going out and seeking a board member. Who have you spent time with over the last 5 years and learned from? Who responds to your emails and seems eager to offer their support? Her board has been invaluable to Adora, and I love this unique approach to mentorship. Asking to pick someone's brain is the kiss of death. When you are looking to engage a mentor, it's important to approach the person, either in person or virtually, in a way that cannot be construed as exploitative or entitled. Remember, this person does not owe you anything. Even if she is authentically kind and giving, she's probably also extremely busy and keenly aware of how valuable her time and expertise is. Instead of thinking about what you can gain from this person, think about how to build a relationship with him or her. This means that, as Sheryl Sandberg said in Lean In, never approach a stranger and ask him or her to be your mentor. It's crucial to allow the relationship to develop organically. As a nice girl, you have an advantage here, because building relationships probably comes naturally to you. Now is the time to leverage that skill to maximize your success. Even more important, though, than not outright asking someone to be your mentor is never, ever asking someone to pick their brain. My friend Teresa Nemeshani recently wrote about this on Facebook in a post that really hit home for me while making me laugh. She said, "Professional networking PSA, do not use the term pick your brain. Just don't. There is a lot of agreement on this among heavy networkers. Here's the issue. Pick your brain is non-reciprocal and exploitative. People who hear this a lot tend to cringe. These people are super time constrained and need to see something in it for them. The offer of coffee does not make it more attractive. Somehow, this wording has amped up in the last month or so, after having receded for a few years. It's a problem. Instead, make it reciprocal. Feedback, brainstorm. Make it quick and easy. A 20-minute phone call, not in-person coffee. And at the close, ask how you can be helpful in return. Please share this out, friends. We need to break the chain." Be open to unlikely mentors. While it's important to be intentional about finding a mentor, sometimes mentors show up where you least expect them. When you're open to this, you can receive meaningful advice and support from people you never would have thought to seek out for that purpose. Susan Canavari, the chief brand officer at JPMorgan Chase, shared a wonderful story with me about finding a mentor in an unexpected place. In 2002, she was working at Digitas and was asked to move to California to run their San Francisco office. Her job was to assess how they could grow the business and motivate the current team after experiencing a rough period with a lot of turnover in the previous 5 years. Susan showed up on her first day and was greeted by 49 skeptical people plus one positive one, Betrayda Gaines, the head of HR for the San Francisco office. Betrayda had been through the upheaval of the last several leaders and had seen it all. Though Susan was technically her superior, Betrayda had valuable insights into their unique office culture. And so the head of HR became a mentor to the head of the entire office. She confided in Susan about why people were so skeptical about her coming to San Francisco and coached her on what she could do and say to gain the staff's trust in her plan to make the office a success. In addition to offering advice that was specific to that office's culture, Betrayda did everything she could to make sure Susan led the team in the most effective way. She drafted communications and made sure Susan expressed a consistent message of hope and positivity. Susan told me that she now thinks about that advice every day and always tries to be as loyal and generous as Betrayda herself. When Betrayda passed away in March of 2017, she left behind a beautiful legacy of kindness and mentorship. What is and isn't a mentor? While mentorship can take on many forms and come from unexpected places, there are some limitations to what a mentor can and should do. I find that many young women come to me asking me to be their mentor without a clear understanding of precisely what the relationship should entail. Here are some basic guidelines for healthy and productive mentorships. A mentor is a casual relationship that develops organically, not a formal arrangement. A lot of nice girls ask me how often they should reach out to a mentor. They want to keep the relationship alive without overstepping and feeling like a bother. I always emphasize to them that this is not a formal relationship. For instance, there is a big difference in my relationships with the founders I formally advise and the young women I mentor. As an advisor, I have a formal agreement to meet and speak with them at a predetermined regularity. With my mentees, it's not like that at all. They often reach out over email or text when they need advice or support. And I try to make time to grab coffee or lunch with them at least once every few months. In addition, I really appreciate it when my mentees continue to engage with me, even when they don't need anything. For example, a young woman I mentor recently emailed me an article that she thought I would find interesting, and another sent me a link to an event that she wanted to make sure I knew about. These gestures show me that I'm on their minds and keep our relationship alive in between our deeper discussions. A mentor is a source of guidance, not a decision maker for you. You should never expect a mentor to tell you what to do. He or she is there to provide wisdom, ideas, advice, information, and a fresh perspective. But at the end of the day, you are responsible for your own decisions. Caroline Goan, the founder and CEO of Levo, said it best. If your life is a book, then as a mentee, engaging mentors is about finding really thoughtful subjects to interview and editors to remind you of why you're writing a book. But you are the author. A mentor is objective, not someone who's personally invested in your decisions. It can be tempting to go to your direct boss or someone else who's very close to you for advice. But that advice often comes filtered through the other person's priorities and opinions, and sometimes even their own insecurities or grudges. The best mentors are able to be objective and point out hidden intricacies, politics, or other aspects of a situation that you may not be aware of. As Caroline Goan says, a mentor is someone who is willing to give you advice that isn't in their own best interest. It takes a real mentor to put you first. When a mentor is truly objective, it's far easier for him or her to notice the unique skills you bring to the table and opportunities for you to put those skills to work. For example, Mari Kuraishi shared a story with me about an early mentor who saw the potential for her to make the most of her unique skills. Mari was in her first real job, which she had gotten strictly on the basis of her knowledge of Russia. She had zero knowledge about the work of the World Bank, her new employer, but she had a great relationship with her boss, Yu Kan, a laconic Chinese-American economist who is smart and pragmatic. At 25, Mari was usually the only woman in every meeting she attended, and almost always the youngest. One day, Yu Kan pulled her aside and asked, "Mari, why don't you ever say anything in the meetings you're in?" She told him that she figured other people's opinions were more valuable than hers, and that someone else usually got around to expressing her point of view. To Mari's surprise, Yu Kan told her that she had knowledge about how things worked in Russia that none of the other people in the room did, and that even if someone else eventually expressed what she had to say, she had to be heard saying it. Mari was shocked. It had never occurred to her that her knowledge of how Russian institutions might constrain the behavior of their clients matter to her colleagues in the room. Nor had it dawned on her that she needed to be known to them as the person who had that knowledge. To this day, Mari credits that boss for taking enough interest in the most junior professional on his team to tell her to speak up, and later to sponsor her for a mid-career executive MBA, one of the biggest perks that the World Bank had to offer, and in the process helping her become the social entrepreneur she is today. It was his objectivity that helped her see where she could add value and understand how it would help her career to do so. A mentor is someone who also gains from the relationship, not someone who only gives. True mentorship is not a one-way street. It's a dynamic relationship in which advice, information, and support flows both ways. Many people think of mentorship in terms of an older, more experienced professional giving advice to someone who's more junior than him or her. But I've learned that I have just as much to learn and gain from my mentees as I have to teach them. A few years ago, a company in my portfolio was in a tight spot. They had a lot of revenue in the pipeline, but were experiencing a momentary shortfall of cash. They clearly weren't going to make it through the next few months without a bridge of financing. The company was 5 years old and had already taken in a lot of money. As an investor, I'm constantly on the lookout for companies that could potentially invest in or acquire the startups in my portfolio. As it happened, I had a relationship with a big company that I saw as a potential acquirer of this startup, and I took on the role of negotiating the acquisition. At this point, I had been through a lot of ups and downs with the startup, and the founder, whom I had mentored for years, could sense my fatigue. She told me, "Fran, when you talk to this company, you need to come from a position of strength." She was absolutely right, and it was so important for me to hear this from her. Though I was her mentor, in that moment, she was mentoring me, and doing so quite effectively. Her advice really helped me have a productive conversation with the company. To me, this is an ideal mentoring relationship, one in which the advice and wisdom flows both ways. I also often act as a virtual mentor on Laevo and hold office hours when young women can ask me questions through the platform. You might be surprised by how powerful a tiny connection like that can turn out to be. When a woman named Britt Heisen introduced herself to me at a conference, she said, "I'm sure you don't remember, but years ago, I asked you a question about digital media on Laevo." This was a great icebreaker, and surprisingly enough, I did remember that question. Britt definitely made an impression on me, and the relationship that stemmed from that interaction has benefited both of us. We stayed in touch after that initial introduction, and not long afterward, Britt launched Millennial Magazine and featured me on the cover as part of their mentor series. My friend Adora told me that once she became a mentor, she was surprised by how valuable it was for her. When Adora was starting out, several more experienced women offered to meet with her and share their wisdom. But she often failed to follow through on these requests because she was worried about overstepping and didn't want to bother them. She was being a people pleaser. Now that she is in a position to mentor younger women, she sees how much she gets out of the experience. Besides energy and inspiration, she gains valuable perspective about what's currently being taught in colleges and universities now, as well as insight into the new sharing economy mentality. Now, Adora understands why the women ahead of her wanted to engage with her when she was younger and regrets not taking them up on it. Hating the idea that anyone else will miss out, her advice to you is to take people at their word. "Believe it when people offer," she says. "If it turns out they really don't have the capacity, so be it. But if they offer, grab it with both hands and see what happens. Sometimes it will be magic." The mentoring mindset. Mentoring doesn't always have to happen in a formal setting, and you can become a mentor no matter what stage of your career you're in. In fact, I've given and received some of the best advice in casual interactions with a peer. Mark Golan was my peer at MoviePhone, AOL, and Time Inc. He was the creative force, and I ran the business side. We had a relationship that, to me, epitomizes peer mentorship. We respected each other's opinions, but never stepped on each other's toes, because we brought different skills to the table. We were constantly learning from each other. My relationship with Mark taught me that mentoring can be a natural way of being, and I've brought that mindset to the teams I've run. To me, the highest compliment is to be thought of as someone who builds effective teams. So I always make it a priority to empower my teams by giving them exposure and sharing the knowledge I've picked up over the course of my career. This isn't just nice, it's also strategic. My team is a reflection of me, and a strong and confident leader knows that she can share her wisdom with those around her and still have value. Melissa Mattias, who works in media partnerships at Facebook, told me that she likes to think of mentoring as daily interactions that are rooted in kindness, being present, and human connection. She tries to make them a part of her life each day. This crystallized for Melissa recently over lunch with a former colleague named Kathy. Their careers and lives had taken them on different paths, and a few years had passed since they'd last connected. During their lunch, Kathy shared that she was at a crossroads in her career and was unsure about pursuing a new opportunity that had come up. They discussed the pros and cons of taking her career in this new direction and then mapped them back to Kathy's personal priorities. Then, Melissa suggested that Kathy start out by consulting for the new company so she could road test the role rather than commit to it immediately. A few days later, Melissa received a text that read, "I want to thank you for encouraging me to pursue that opportunity. I've agreed to a 2-month project. Our lunch and conversation came at the perfect time. I've always trusted your advice and appreciate you taking the time to talk through things with me." While they'd always had a great rapport, Melissa had never considered herself a mentor to Kathy. But now she saw that when strung together, her little acts of kindness had made a bigger impact than she realized. Can you incorporate moments like this into your daily life? Remember, mentorship is a spectrum. While some mentors are indeed the traditional champions at your place of employment, who pave the way for you to make the next step in your career, the truth is, mentors can come in all shapes and sizes. A mentor might be someone who provided you with just the right piece of advice you needed, at the moment you needed it. She may be a helpful friend or someone you respect and admire, with whom you're engaged in a long-term, mutually supportive relationship. Every type of mentor has different benefits. It's also important to note that Melissa's former colleague, Kathy, followed up by sharing the impact that Melissa had on her decision-making. This is key to continuing to engage with a mentor and nurturing that relationship over time. If you've made a decision, stood up to a bully, or taken an opportunity thanks in part to advice or support you've received from a mentor, remember to let them know how grateful you are for their wisdom. As a mentor, I love hearing that I've made an impact. Not only does this make me feel good and motivate me to keep going, but it also serves as valuable feedback so that I know where to focus my advice going forward. Scale your mentorship. No matter how much I would like to, I don't have time to meet individually with each person who reaches out to me for mentorship. Plus, I found that one-on-one interactions aren't always the best way to impart as much knowledge as possible. So I've looked for creative ways to scale my mentorship so that I can have the greatest possible impact on as many people as I can. These techniques can work at any stage of your career to make valuable connections and dip your toe into the wonderful world of mentorship. As I mentioned earlier, I regularly host a mentor circle, which is a group of about 10 to 15 women. We meet either in a coffee shop, a restaurant, or the co-working space I use. It's a very informal gathering. We meet for about an hour and get to know each other. I answer questions that come up, but I've seen that it's actually far more beneficial for the women to learn from each other and build peer-to-peer connections. After noticing this, I've intentionally begun devoting more time during these gatherings for them to interact with each other. Instead of fielding questions, I ask the women to go around in a circle and share something they're working on or struggling with, and I give the other women a chance to respond with thoughts on each struggle before adding my own 2 cents. I try to encourage the same dynamic in all sorts of group settings. Caroline Goen regularly hosts dinners for diverse groups of people who all get the chance to become mentors for one another. In her book, The Big Life, my friend Anne Choquette, the former editor-in-chief of 17, describes how she hosts Badass Babes dinner parties where she gathers millennial women and asks them, "If I could solve any problem for you, what would it be?" The more you follow the networking advice in Chapter 7 and put yourself out there, you'll be amazed by how many of these events you hear about. But you don't need someone else to host a mentor circle. Why not reach out to some peers who seem interesting and engaged and arrange a networking / peer mentoring event at a local coffee shop, in a conference room at your company's office, or a co-working space. You can loosely structure the event by going around and introducing yourselves, and then giving each person a few minutes to share a recent career struggle, goal, or concern. Anyone with advice can weigh in. Another way to structure the event is to have everyone go around and state an offer, something they are willing to help others in the group with, and an ask, something they need from others in the group. If it's not practical or possible for you to host an event like this, try hosting a Skype conference with a group of like-minded women, or using other online platforms such as the Ask Me Anything feature on Mogul, the virtual mentor opportunities on Laevo, or even Google Hangouts or Facebook Live. My wish is that you'll take everything you learn from your mentors and all the skills you've learned throughout this book and use them to impart wisdom, advice, and support, and spread the power of kindness in service of all the women who will come next. Just by being a strong and kind, ambitious and likable, empathetic and decisive, confident and flexible woman, you can help turn around the double standards we all face and permanently change the way women at work are perceived. And when the women coming up behind you follow in your footsteps, they'll multiply your kindness exponentially.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Myth of the Nice Girl, Achieving a Career You Love Without Becoming a Person You Hate. Written by Fran Hauser with Jody Lipper. Performed by Fran Hauser. Executive producers Laura Gatchko and Mike Charzik. Producer Chris Sacco. Copyright 2018 by Fran Hauser. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.